Good evening, Robert and loyal listeners.
Or morning, or afternoon.
Oh, right, because it could be many times. Have fun with cleaning or driving or whatever you're doing.
Yes, as long as you are doing it safely and responsibly.
Yes!
This particular podcast is brought to you by Polyjuice Potion.
Yeah!
Which we found a recipe for online that includes gin, sambuca, lime juice, green vegetable fruity juice, and some Sprite, and it is quite enjoyable.
It is quite enjoyable. I feel like this podcast would be more enjoyable.
Oh, yes.
Since it is influencing.
Right. We are under the influence of Polyjuice Potion.
Right.
Right.
Although we have stayed looking the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's that. Because
the truly happy man would be able to look in the mirror of Erised and see only himself. And would want to take Polyjuice Potion filled with his own hair.
That is so beautiful.
Right?
Emmy.
It's just,
dang.
It's a metaphor for life.
That was wonderful.
This is going to be a good podcast.
This is going to be a really good podcast.
Gentle viewers, we are now at book the seventh.
Book the seventh.
There is no eighth book.
There are eight movies, though. We have made it to the final installment of Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's no way that this is going to be the last podcast because we got stuff to talk about for days. So do not fear, little flock, because we will continue to podcast.
It is your father's goodwill to give you more podcasts.
Right. So, yeah. Usually we have a longer intro than this.
Yeah, but I think we should just get into it. Let's get into it.
So,
Harry Potter
and the Deathly Hallows. What are the Deathly Hallows? We don't know.
We don't know. We're going to find out.
But maybe. We're going to find out. Just like in Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, we figured out who the Half-Blood Prince was.
Who was the Half-Blood Prince?
Why, that was Severus Snape.
Who, coincidentally, begins the seventh book.
What?
Okay. Planned that very...
We totally planned that transition before starting this podcast. We didn't.
We did not.
At all.
This is going to be a good podcast. All right. So, we begin under Cloak of Night, as is most appropriate for Severus Snape.
Mm-hmm.
Darkness.
He wears a Cloak of Night.
That is true.
Not really. That's not like a magical thing he owns. He just has a black cloak
that
he wears all the time. Okay.
Metaphors are very tricky in the wizarding world.
They are, because they could be real. Anyway.
Right.
Sorry, continue.
So he and another cloaked figure appear on the same road around the same time, and both are like pointing their wands at each other, and then figure out that the other is cool, as in the other is also a Death Eater, because it's also Yaxley.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Who's a Death Eater.
Mm-hmm.
He's been previously mentioned periodically.
Also the name of my external hard drive. Fun fact.
Why?
I was watching Harry Potter a lot at the time, and I wanted a cool name. I think at the time, my computer was named Sirius Black. So I'm not really sure why my external hard drive was Yaxley. But yeah, my external hard drive is Yaxley.
Okay.
Was Yaxley.
What happened to your external hard drive?
Well,
I feel like this is not the script. You never want to speak in past tense of an external hard drive.
Well, this is like, it's totally not a good story for pop. Screw it. We're going to do
Doesn't
it. Okay,
doing
so.
It anyway. We're going on a tangent.
Okay, quick. Yeah. So I had a PC named Sirius Black with an external hard drive named Yaxley. I think I just like the name Yaxley.
Okay, fair enough.
So I went with that. But then I got a Mac. And so I felt like the external hard drive would be weird with operating both systems.
Yeah, they do get a little fussy.
Right, so then I kept Yaxley, like, he's still in my possession, but I don't use him. I have a new one.
Poor Yaxley.
I know.
It's okay.
That's okay. He's a Death Eater.
That's what you have for being a Death Eater, is
right.
You just get sitting...
You get tossed to the side when you become irrelevant, when the Voldemort that is Windows becomes no longer present in your life.
That was a good metaphor.
Thank you. I very much made it up as I went along.
That was so solid. That was solid. I was not prepared for how good that was going
to
be.
Neither was I. By the time I got to the end of it, I was like, this is going to turn out. We're going to make it through this.
Made it through the wilderness.
Woo!
So, Yaxley and Snape appear on this dark lane and basically walk to a house together. And they're both like, we're cool. We're Death Eaters. We're not going to attack each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yaxley does get startled at one point, but it turns out to be a all-white peacock. strutting along the hedge of Lucius Malfoy, as we find out, mansion.
Yeah.
And Yaxley is clearly not impressed by the fact that Lucius Malfoy owns pure white peacocks.
Which, I mean, albino peacocks, really? That's I mean, it makes sense for him, but... What? I
don't know. Yeah, that just seems sort of... It's pretentious.
It is.
They both give some sort of salute to the gate, and it lets them in. They raise their arm in a sort of salute, and so I think we're supposed to understand that it's like they're showing their dark mark, or lifting the arm of the dark mark.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm going to assume it's just a Heil Hitler, because, I mean, the parallels are obvious.
Obviously.
Yeah.
I would also like to say that they do this bad-assedly in the movie.
Where, oh, yeah.
I mean, they kind of screw it up, because Yax is not there, it's just Snape. But yeah. He, like, comes in that weird, like, dark cloud thing, which I don't think Death Eaters actually have, but whatever.
Whatever.
And he's like, and then he, like, shows up at the gate and just, like, flings his arm, and then it, like, bursts open, and he walks in all, like,
badass.
Just cool and Alan Rickman-y.
Yeah, it's true.
So, kudos movie on that.
Yeah, definitely superior to the book as far as entrance.
Mm-hmm.
So he shows up, he and Yaxley show up at the dinner.
Mm-hmm.
They're at the Malfoy's mansion, there's a long dinner table, He Who Must Not Be Named, a.k.a. Lord Voldemort, is sitting at the head of the table. No surprise there.
Right.
Yaxley gets a seat kind of in the middle. Snape gets a seat on Voldemort's immediate right.
Yeah, Voldemort's like, hey, Snape,
right
why
here,
don't you
buddy.
Sit right at my right?
Right here, at my right hand. You're my right hand man.
Right. Because, I mean, he did kill Dumbledore for him.
Right.
Which is kind of a big thing he had on his to-do list.
That's true.
Like, number one, well...
Number two.
Number two is
number
probably
one.
Kill Dumbledore.
Well, number one, take over the Wizarding World. Number two, kill Harry Potter. Number three, kill Elvis Dumbledore.
But I feel like in order to achieve number one and two, you're going to have to get number three done. I mean, it's the third priority, but it's coming first, you know?
Right, exactly. So how do you prioritize
that? Not sure how you'd order it.
Anyway.
So yeah, so then, so they're having a Death Eater council meeting.
Yeah, basically. Do you think they use Robert's Rules of Order at the Death Eater Council meeting?
Probably not, but I wish they would.
Probably not, because...
Let's keep this organized, you know?
Right, well, but Robert's Rules of Order are for debate, and no one debates.
That's true, no one's gonna debate.
Voldemort.
I just really wish that Narcissa Malfoy was sitting with, like, glasses on her nose, and, like, typing on a typewriter all the minutes.
Like, she's the stenographer.
Yes. And Voldemort's later like, did we pass this resolution? Or...
Right, yeah. Can I get a second? Yes! Everyone! Everyone seconds!
Everyone seconds! Snape would totally be his VP at this point.
Oh, gross.
Dang. Oh, where were you going?
No, no, you go ahead.
Malfoys, while they are at the Malfoy Manor, the Malfoys have kind of fallen out of grace with Voldy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Lucius really screwed up at the ministry by not getting the prophecy.
Right. Big trouble for Lucius.
Yeah. And then...
Malfoy failed to kill Dumbledore.
Malfoy didn't kill Dumbledore, which I'm not sure if Voldy knows or not, but I feel like he probably knows.
I think he knows.
Yeah. So, like, they're not in the best of terms with Voldy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And this causes some tension.
As we will see in the next 2 to 3 pages of this podcast.
Right. If you're following along.
In your book.
Turn the page, but it goes ding.
Those you're probably too books. Young, but, like, I remember when we used to do slides in class.
Wow.
Yeah, and there was a little, like, and there was an audio recording, and it would go ding, and then you had to switch the slide at the end of the audio recording.
I think I did, like, I feel like in one science class we had that, because I just had a stubborn old teacher that was like, we're going to use this forever. I grew up in the transparency age.
Ah. Oh, yes.
Which slowly...
I have a lot of transparencies, yeah.
It's slowly, like, my junior and senior year... of high school started switching to, like, overhead projectors, like the, like, PowerPoints and stuff, like, computerized stuff. PowerPoint. But, yeah.
Make your points with power.
Yes.
So, anyway.
Council meeting.
Right. So, they're like, what are we going to do about this Harry Potter kid? And, so Snape sits next to Voldemort and says, they will move him this coming Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Saturday next at nightfall.
Yes.
And then...
Non-specific.
Is it Yaxley?
I think it's Yaxley.
Yaxley's like, I heard that Harry's getting moved on his birthday? Mm-hmm. The day before his birthday? Mm-hmm. On his birthday. And Voldemort's like, wait, I don't know if he says anything.
Voldemort stares directly at Snape as if to, like, read his mind.
Oh, yeah, Snape's like, this is a false trail that the Order has planted. Mm-hmm. Harry's gonna get moved.
They're gonna move him early.
Move him early. Which, how the hell does Snape know this?
He's in the Order.
Not at this point.
Oh, Mundungus Fletcher's on the under the Imperius.
Right, yep, yep, yep. Okay.
Okay. Spoiler.
Spoiler, sorry, because I have questions. Mundungus
Fletcher is under the Imperius curse. We'll run into Mundungus in a little bit. And so he is leaking information to Snape. But,
there's like a ton of
double spoiler alert.
Wait, what?
Snape is a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, if you've seen the movies, you know this. So
I feel like we should keep him sinister, though.
Alright, fine, he's sinister. Snape is a bad guy.
Snape sucks.
Boo, Snape. I mean, he is kind of an asshole, no matter how you slice it.
He really is.
Sorry, dollar in the jar. Sorry, Carrie's mom.
Yeah, I don't think she cares.
Let's just pretend, though, because I feel better
about it. I do like the dollar in the jar thing.
Yeah. All the dollars would go to
a total sitcom-y look.
So, anyway, okay.
Oh, yeah, we should pick some sort of, like, weird charity to give the dollars in the jar.
Yeah, exactly. To those orphaned by the Second Battle of Hogwarts. It all goes to Teddy Lupin.
Aww.
Who I always want to say Teddy Ruxpin.
I hope he has a weird Teddy Ruxpin voice.
I hope so, too.
I bet he knows his letters really well. I hope he grew up with the Teddy Ruxpin. I'm sorry. I'll get off this.
I think he does grow up with the Teddy Ruxpin era.
Yeah.
Because he's born in, like, what, 97?
Yeah.
So.
97-ish.
But magical stuff interferes with electronics. So he probably couldn't have a working Teddy Ruxpin.
For some reason, I feel like he grew up in the Muggle world. I have no basis for that. No, and it doesn't make any sense. Like, why would that happen?
He doesn't
grow up in the Muggle world. But for some reason, I feel like he does. Maybe it's just parallel Harry.
I mean, that could be. I feel like that could be an outgrowth of the Weasley's Wizarding Weezes. Where they have, like, you know, they have these sort of, like, these are the Muggle prank areas. What if they did, like, Muggle toys, but remade with magic?
Right.
So you'd have the Teddy Ruxpin, you'd have, like, a speak and spell, like, all those, like, you'd have a fake cell phone.
That would be amazing.
All the things that you can do in the Muggle world, but, like, refashioned so that they can work in the magical world.
We should talk to the Weasleys about this.
Clearly. We will speak to them.
Right.
Moving on
before we cry.
Okay. Alright, so they determine when they're gonna move Harry, and Snape is the one giving information to Dumbledore.
Yep.
Voldemort. Whatever. one guy in charge of shit. And, Yaxley's very proud of himself because he's placed an Imperius curse upon Pious Thickness.
Yes. And I would just like to interject here because this is totally lost in the movie.
Yeah.
Because, okay, the movie, like, Pious is just part of the Death Eaters, and he's like, hey.
Right.
Whatever. And, like, Voldemort asks him a question, then he says something, and then Voldemort's like, sounds like a true politician. But the thing is that, no, he's not a Death Eater, but Yaxley put him under the Imperius curse, so now, and, so now he's gonna, like, be on their side, but not of his own free will.
Right.
He is the head of the Auror office right now. And, yeah.
So basically, they're trying to kill the Prime Minister, Rufus Scrimgeour.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're trying to get everybody in that office either turned to their side or under the Imperius curse.
Right.
So, they believe that the Ministry for Magic knows where Harry, or specifically the Prime Minister, knows where Harry is. Because they don't know at this point where. Oh, no, they know where he is, but they don't know where he's going. Yeah.
Right, because, they set up, like, 7 different drop points.
Right, exactly.
Which, again, lost in the movie. I'm gonna stop saying that, because a lot of stuff is lost in the movie.
No, I think that's fair, because we need to be warning our people about what's lost in the movie.
It's true.
That's our responsibility. So, so they're like, okay, well, the Ministry won't have fallen by Saturday, so we need to figure out how to capture Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, there are... He's definitely going to a home of someone in the Order. We don't know who. We've got to catch him, like, when he's in transit.
When he's, traveling.
We've got to boost it in transit, as they say in the Italian Job, which is a great movie.
It is a good movie.
I'm glad you think so.
It made me want a Mini Cooper for a very long
time. Well, yeah. I mean, I think that was one of those, like, you know, it's like when they put Converse in the iRobot movie and then there were Converse everywhere.
I did not see iRobot.
Well, good. Then your Converse are just naturally cool.
I've been wearing Converse since, like, not very long in the grand scope of Converse.
They brought them back and
I mean, I've been wearing them since my middle school years, but...
Okay. They, like, reissued them in 2004 and, like, really tried to kick it.
Oh, I feel like I was wearing previous.
Okay,
previous
to that. I think it was just
not to be all like hipster. But like, I feel like
I believe you. I trust you. I don't think they had like gone out of fashion. I think they were trying to like reboost.
Right, I can see that. Yeah.
Anyway, so
okay.
So basically, it's like, all right, we have to kill Harry Potter.
Yeah. Oh, also, there's the whole Charity Burbage thing.
Oh gosh, I completely forgot about Charity Burbage.
Okay, you want me to cover it?
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm trying to remember if it's different in the book. I kind of feel like it isn't. Anyway.
I think it's pretty similar in the movie.
Yeah, so, Charity Burbage, there's this, so, they're having this council meeting at a table. I'm calling it a council meeting.
I think so.
And there's this, lifeless form, like, body,
mm-hmm.
hanging out, like, suspended above them. And it's really creepy, but, you know, it's Voldemort, so he kind of surrounds himself with creepiness. So you find that she's unconscious. It's this unconscious body.
It is, in the book, she's able to speak.
Right, but then I thought she was unconscious at first and then perks up.
Oh, maybe, okay.
It doesn't matter. At some point, she, says something to Severus.
Right.
Like, hey... Help me out, buddy! Like, we were cool. And Voldemort's like, oh, hey. I think Voldemort's
talking. Yeah, Voldemort talks over her.
Yeah. Says, this is Charity Burbage. She taught at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry and taught Muggle Studies.
And I'm pretty sure freaking
yeah. Because who would ever want to study about being a Muggle? Like, that's... And then he's like, so that's super lame. And she's like, hey, Severus, you want to help a brother out? Because, like...
We were co-teachers,
and this is really weird and creepy, and I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah.
And then Voldemort kills her.
Yep. Also, Voldemort mentions, like, oh, Narcissa, you must be so happy with the good news in your family this week. And she's like... And Bellatrix is like, and it's because he's like, aha, your sister,
your sister's daughter.
Right, your sister, what's his sister's name?
Andromeda?
Yes, your sister Andromeda. Nicely done. Gold star for Carrie. Your sister Andromeda has a daughter, Nymphadora, and she has married the werewolf. Remus Lupin, you must be very happy. And everybody at the table's like, ah, ha, 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 the Malfoys are losers. And then Bellatrix is, like, super mad and yells a lot about how she hasn't seen, I think she hasn't seen Andromeda since she married, Ted Tonks. And, then there's a lot of, is Ted a Muggle?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
Huh. Because I feel like he's either a Muggle or Muggle-born.
Yeah.
So the Malfoys have already, like, fallen yes. from
fame. Oh, no, it's a Mudblood. He's a Mudblood.
Okay. Yeah. So the Malfoys have already been kind of lowered in their status from Voldemort because of what Lucius did.
Right.
And now they're lowered even more right. in status because they have this relative who married a Muggle-born Mudblood person.
Right.
And then had a daughter who's now marrying a freaking werewolf.
Right. And this is just mocked.
Yeah.
Which
is kind of weird considering they have a werewolf on their side.
Right, but I think it's like the marrying and mating and yeah, just basically probably. Making fun of them. And I think he says something like, Draco, are you going to babysit the cubs?
Yeah.
And everybody's like, ah, ha, 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 ha.
Which is kind of a funny line, I don't know.
It's true. And I think he says something along the lines to Bellatrix of like, all of our family trees become... warped and twisted at some point. You must prune them at the nearest opportunity. And she says, oh yes, at the nearest opportunity. And she's clearly like really excited about killing Tonks.
Yeah.
So that's creepy.
So that's not good.
And, yeah, then he kills Charity Burbage and has Nagini eat her. Good which time. Is very well done in the movie.
Yeah, very
also
well done.
Takes Lucius's wand.
Yeah.
Because he's like, well, my wand won't work against Harry Potter, but I've been informed that if I choose another wand, it'll work.
And there's this moment, so
oh, yeah.
Voldemort goes to Lucius and he's like, I'm gonna need your wand. And Lucius is like, okay. And then Voldemort kind of holds his wand, like he holds both wands.
Yeah.
And Lucius makes this moment, like this movement to grab Voldemort's wand. And Voldy's like, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
You think I'm gonna give you my wand?
Yeah.
And so, and Lucius is like, no, just kidding.
Yeah, but now Lucius is just
but
totally...
now Lucius doesn't have a wand, like, yeah. Can't do magic.
Yeah, he's
which
completely
is...
crippled in the wizarding
it
world.
It feels very, like, sorry, like, very emasculating. Like,
yes,
like he,
absolutely.
Like, to me, this feels like a castration scene. Like,
I...
like, metaphorically, obviously.
Sure. I was thinking
but
more,
like,
disabled.
Like, the cutting down of, like,
yeah.
status.
Yeah.
And power and ability yeah. and...
I think one of the things
like,
that we missed,
damn.
Too, is that because of this, the Malfoys, like, really solidify as a family.
Yeah.
And so, and that becomes important later in the book.
Yeah, the Malfoys really band together. Narcissa and Lucius and Draco
mm-hmm.
really get together. Oh my gosh, okay, total side story.
I love
side
stories.
Moment.
Let's do it.
But I thought of it because there's the way, like, you can either say Lucius or Lucius. I'm not really sure which is right,
right.
So I kind of use them interchangeably.
Fair enough.
But I was watching Harry Potter 4 the other day,
yes.
and Barnabas Crouch, in the movie, there's this point where Mad-Eye Moody's, like, talking to him and calls him Bartemius. And I was like, is that how you pronounce
no!
that? No! Because I've always been saying Barnabas, but he's like, he's like, gotten a bit crazy, Bartemius? And I was like, Bartemius?
That's a little weird.
What? Okay, sorry, continue. We'll go back.
I would go with Bartimaeus.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Interesting.
Anyway.
Interesting.
I was
okay.
very confused by that.
So.
Back to book 7.
They planned to kill Harry Potter. They
yeah.
They plan to take him. They know that he's going to have to escape. The house, basically on foot.
Yep.
Because he can't apparate or go by the flu network.
Because they have the flu network being watched.
Mm-hmm.
He also can't perform any magic because he still hasn't come of age.
Right.
So the Ministry of Magic knows every move, like, every magical movement he makes
mm-hmm.
if he were to use magic, so...
Every vow he breaks. Every smile he fakes. Every claim he stakes. They'll be watching him.
I'm so bad you just did that. Point to Emmy. Just
yay, gold star.
That was amazing. So, because he has a trace on him, any
right.
magic that he uses will be seen through the department or through the Ministry of
right.
Magic.
And because
and
the
so,
Ministry now has
since they've infiltrated the Ministry mm-hmm. of Magic so much, they'll know.
Mm-hmm.
That was exactly. a lot of explain that you probably didn't even need.
That was needed.
Probably already deduced it, but
yeah.
whatever.
All right. So, yeah, then Nagini eats Charity Burbage in front of everybody, and it's like, well, cool.
Yep.
Then we move to Harry Potter.
Move to Harry Potter, who I think is in his room starting off.
He's currently bleeding.
Oh, right. That is
actually.
Weird.
He's currently bleeding, and he steps on a... He's got his hand is bleeding, and he is getting out of his room to go bandage it up, and he steps on a cup of tea
yep.
laid outside his door.
And he's like, oh, great, Dudley, like, put a trap
booby,
for me.
Yeah, cold tea booby trap.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
Worst booby trap ever, which is why he thinks Dudley did it.
Yep.
And goes and cleans up his hand and then comes back. And he cut his hand on something in the bottom of his trunk, which is apparently full of grit.
Yeah, so the bottom of his trunk has accumulated, like, broken quills and, like, random bits of parchment paper. It's kind of like when, I mean, like, when you go to school and you, like, empty out your backpack at the end of the year and there's, like, random, like, empty gum containers,
right.
like, whatever, at the bottom of your backpack. You're
right.
Like, I don't even know how that got in there, but whatever. Harry's never really fully cleaned out his trunk before. He's just, like, whatever, and left that stuff in there.
Yeah.
But now he's fully cleaning it out.
Yep.
And putting in only the things that he thinks he'll need, because I think he still uses the trunk at this point. No?
Nope, he... Is just I think he's just unpacking the trunk to, like, unpack everything.
Because I thought he brought that
he
to
just,
the...
No, he just packed his
rucksack. Okay, never mind. And there's this moment which makes me feel, like, nostalgic and stuff, because he takes out all of his textbooks, and he's like, whatever, I won't need those.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I wonder if I'll ever, like, come back to this house mm-hmm. and, like, get my stuff again.
Yeah. He thinks that maybe his aunt and uncle will burn things in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And so...
So then he goes down to the kitchen.
Yep.
And, Uncle Vernon's there, and he's like, we're... He's like, that's it. I decided we're not doing it. Mm-hmm. And Harry's like, I knew this was going to frickin' happen. And he's like, why? And his uncle's like, it's preposterous. There's no need for it. We're normal and cool muggles. Like, whatever.
Yep.
So, what they're talking about...
right.
...is, Harry needs to get moved to a safe place.
Right.
And so the Dursleys also have to be moved to a safe place because which is very awkward. Harry says, Death Eaters might come here and torture you and question you about where I am.
Right.
And says something about, like, because he, like, they think that you care enough for me that you'll know or something.
Right.
Like, it's, like, or really just, awkward, like...
There's this sort of insinuation of, like...
As if you would know where I am, or right. as if you
Or
would...
as if I would care that they were torturing you.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Something
yeah.
like that. Like, it's something exactly like... What.
Or it's, like, to torture you to try and get me to come save you. And right. there's, like, this awkward moment of, like, would I come save you?
Right.
And
where everybody's just like, would you come save me? I don't know. I'm probably not.
So Harry spent some time convincing Vernon, like, no, you need to go with the wizards that are coming to get mm-hmm. you. You need to go into safety for a while. Is there a moment with Petunia?
There's not.
Okay.
Diddle is Diggle and that one of the, and Hestia Smith.
Sure.
Come to get the Dursleys. And because Vernon has been convinced. And there's this sort of awkward, there's this moment where Hestia and is like, oh, Daedalus, let's wait in the hallway so they can say their sorrowful goodbyes. And they're just like, okay.
Catch you later.
Bye. And Vernon kind of like stumbles out of the room. And then Dudley says, well, where's he going? And they all look at him and they're like, what do you mean? He's like, well, where's Harry going? Isn't he coming with us? And
Harry's like, no.
No.
And Dudley's like, but...
And I think you missed this in the movie, right? They just sort of like,
There's a deleted scene in which this happens.
Oh, that's sweet. So Dudley's basically like, well, but what's going to happen to him? And he like sort of shows this concern for... Harry, for the first time in his life, and Harry's like,
Harry's like, what the hell?
Maybe he didn't leave that cup of tea as a booby trap. Maybe that was, like, him trying to be nice.
And then he remembers, I think Dudley, like, shakes his hand or wants to give him a hug or something.
Dudley shakes his hand,
I was gonna say, I feel like a hug is too far.
Yeah, too much.
Shakes his hand, and Harry's like, and he says something about, well, he did save my life. And Harry's like, oh, back in book 5,
yes,
I did save you from Dementors. Book 6, if you recall, Harry was home for, like, 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and during that time was, like, shut up in his room,
right.
super depressed, because Sirius had just died.
Right.
So didn't really hang out with Dudley all that much. So now he's, like, back, and so Dudley has changed his perception of Harry, because Harry saved his life, and is being super nice to him, but Harry hasn't really realized this.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Dudley shakes his hand and Harry says, did the Dementors blow a different personality into you? And he says, dunno. Bye, Harry. Like, kind of awkwardly.
Yeah.
And Harry says, see you, Big D. Which is so cute.
Which is so cute.
And then Dudley leaves the room, and as Dudley leaves, he passes it to Petunia, and Petunia, like, gives Harry a look and looks like she's about to say something, and then she just runs away.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, I'm here.
Okay.
So, they leave.
Then Harry adorably goes to the cupboard under the stairs.
He, like, shows Hedwig around a little bit.
Yeah, he's like, look, this is where, like, this is where I lived before. I even knew I was a wizard. And, like, he can't fit in the cupboard anymore.
Yeah.
It's so adorable.
He's remembering, like, when he was a kid and he'd be alone for a while in the house. Like, he'd run to get a snack from the fridge and then go watch as many cartoons as he possibly could on Dudley's TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's this very cute little innocent kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then he's just waiting for Mad-Eye Moody to come get him.
So then Mad-Eye Moody shows up.
Oh! He's waiting for Mad-Eye Moody to come get him, and he's remembering different flashes of, like, even though he didn't know he was a wizard, like, different things that he knew about his family. And he remembers one thing about, like, a roaring motorbike.
Oh,
and
yeah.
At that moment, a roaring motorbike is heard, and he's like, "What?"
And so not only does Mad-Eye Moody show up, but a bunch of people do. Mad-Eye Moody, Hagrid, Tonks, Lupin,
Kingsley,
Fred and George Weasley, Ron Weasley, Hermione Granger, Fleur Delacour, Bill Weasley, Mundungus Fletcher. Yep. I feel like that's it.
There's 14 total.
But a bunch of people. I counted, and I might have just gotten to 13, but I don't remember.
Did you count Harry?
I did not.
Bingo, 14.
Boom. So, so they all come in, and Harry's like, hey,
everybody.
What's going on? And so, Mad-Eye Moody's like, hey, we're pretty sure that Death Eaters are going to come after us, because, like, why wouldn't they? So, he's like, we're pretty sure there's a leak in the information, so we're kind of guessing that Death Eaters are going to come after us. Here's the plan. Yep. We're all going to split up into teams of two. There will be one member of the Order tied to one other person.
Right.
Yep, so.
Yep, you revealed it too quickly, but that's okay. Keep going.
That's fine. And he's like, we're gonna, go, there's gonna be seven different possible points of where you will end up. So he's like, we put protections over all these different locations of where you could be. So, like, Grimmauld Place, I think, is one. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the Order's house.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. And so he's like, meh. A
couple other places like that.
Right. And Harry's like, but how are we going to fool them or something?
Yeah. He's like, well, if they see 14 of us fly towards one place,
aren't they gonna...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And or will they just follow me or something like that?
Right. And Mad-Eye Moody's like, we're all gonna fly to different places, and, we're gonna use Polyjuice Potion to look like you.
And Harry's like, no!
No! You are not becoming me and risking your lives like that. Nope. And Hermione's like, yeah, I told you he was gonna take it well.
Yeah.
And Harry's like, no. And then,
Fred and George say,
Fred and
like,
George convince him.
We're not excited either. You know, what if we were stuck as Specky Scrawny Gets forever?
Yeah.
I don't know who convinces him. I think it's Mad-Eye Moody. He just says, like, everyone here is underage.
Everyone here is of age and knows the consequences and the risks.
Mundungus Fletcher's like, I actually haven't consented. I don't want to do this.
I've been coerced.
Yeah, and they're like, we don't care. Yeah. We don't like you. You're a scalawag.
In the movie, I remember what turns him, because in the movie,
right,
Hermione grabs his hair and is just like, whatever, and like grabs it out of his head, which is not really all of that Hermione personality wise.
But really,
did he take his hair out of his head against his will?
I
feel like, I don't know.
I would not really. I feel like, but she's the one who comes up with, like, the idea of the Polyjuice Potion in year two. Like, Hermione's an action taker.
She is. I guess I just always think of her as, like, reading.
Yeah. The thing that Mad-Eye finally says that sort of convinces Harry is he's giving him this sort of lecture, and he's like, listen, when your mother's charm breaks and we leave this house, like, you're not going to have the protections that you have. These people have consented. They know what they're doing. We need to keep you safe at all, at all costs. The fate of the Wizarding World depends on you, and, you know, this is the best way we can scramble things. Even you-know-who can't split himself into seven.
Boom.
That's his last line, and Harry sort of looks at Hermione and Ron really awkwardly, like, and they're both like,
he didn't split himself into
don't
seven.
Look at us! It looks guilty and obvious, you dumbass!
As if, like, right then, Mad-Eye was gonna be like, unless he did into seven Horcruxes.
Right.
Something
that they would not know about. So.
Yeah. So.
So Harry's like, all
right. Harry's like, all right, gives him the hair, willingly. And then, so Fred, George, Hermione, Ron, Fleur, Mundungus, and Harry are all the people that will be transporting with, I'm not going to do them in order because I don't remember what order I said, Mad-Eye Moody, Hagrid, Tonks, Lupin, Bill,
Kingsley.
Mad-Eye.
Yeah. We said Mad-Eye already.
Did we?
I think we... Shoot.
Okay. Mad-Eye, Kingsley, Lupin, Tonks, Hagrid.
Arthur Weasley. Got there.
Okay. Yeah. So then they all get on... Do they all get on? Or no, they're all get on broomsticks except for Hermione and Fleur get on Thestrals because they don't, they're not comfortable on
broomsticks. I believe that's correct, yes.
So Fleur and Bill get on a Thestral, Hermione and
Kingsley
get on a Thestral. Harry and Hagrid go on the motorbike.
Right.
Then the rest are on broomsticks.
Right. Ron is with Tonks.
Ron's with Tonks.
Fred is with his dad, and George is with someone else. Lupin? Yeah. Yeah, Fred's with his dad, and George with someone else. Or it's the other way around, maybe. I don't remember exactly which.
Well, I think George is with Lupin.
Okay. And then Mundungus is with Mad-Eye.
It doesn't really matter. Yeah, it
doesn't
but
really matter that much.
Just seemed to matter to me in that moment. Okay. So then they take off.
Right. Maybe they're expecting to meet a couple of Death Eaters in the air.
Right. They're like, there might be some patrolling. People. Because they're like, they've been patrolling Privet Drive, so they're probably going to be a couple. And like, the second they get out of the protection, it's just Death Eater Central.
Everywhere.
Like, everywhere. They're just, yeah. And so this huge battle begins. And like, everyone kind of splits off into separate directions. Harry's freaking out because he wants all of his friends to be safe.
Right.
And then he's trying to keep, so, and Harry is stuck in, like, the sidecar of the motorbike, mm-hmm. which he can barely fit into, especially with his rucksack and Hedwig.
Right, and his broomstick.
And his broomstick.
Almost immediately, they're knocked upside down, everything falls out from between Harry's knees, the broomstick falls to earth, he barely catches the top of the cage and his rucksack.
Yep.
So he's like, oh, thank God, I've got Hedwig. And then, I think almost immediately, she gets killed.
Yeah.
She's just in her cage. So in the movie, there's this beautiful thing where, like, he lets Hagrid free, or he lets Hedwig free, and she protects him, and that's how they figure out that he's the real Harry Potter.
That's not
what happens. We'll get to that in a minute.
She's hit with the Avada Kedavra spell and dies, falls to earth, which is,
Actually, I think, as she's falling, Harry hits the cage with Confrigo. And it explodes.
Oh, yep.
So he sort of uses it as a...
Yeah. So then there's Death Eaters going everywhere. Mm-hmm. Harry's, like, trying to... Like, he's throwing spells back at them to try and get them out of there. He's, like, yelling, like, Protego and what's the...
Stupefy. Stupefy.
Thank you. Ton of Stupefy.
Lots of Stupefy.
He's all about the Stupefy.
Not fair.
And then at some point, oh, and then Hagrid is like, check this out, it's awesome, and hits a button and a huge, he hits a button on a motorcycle and a huge, like, flame comes up behind them and they, like, speed forward for a little bit. He's like, Arthur Weasley installed that. I'm like, oh, Arthur. More Death Eaters come up against them.
Yep.
Harry at some point yells Expelliarmus.
Well, what happened, there's a whole bunch of stuff where, like, it gets... hit the motorbike gets hit with a spell, and so the sidecar starts falling off, and Hagrid tries to fix it, and he can't, and so Harry uses Wingardium Leviosa to barely keep it afloat for a bit, and then Hagrid grabs him and throws him on the back of the motorbike, so Harry's back-to-back with Hagrid and is, like, throwing all these spells into the night, trying to keep everybody off, and he sees one of the Death Eaters come close enough that his hood falls off, and it's Stan Shunpike, the driver of the night bus, and he's clearly, like, his eyes are kind of glazed over, he's clearly been imperious, so Harry refuses to use... any really rough spells on him, he uses Expelliarmus. And then one of the other Death Eaters yells, that's him, that's the one!
That's the real Harry Potter! And then they fly away. Mm-hmm. And Harry's like, what the hell? Like,
yeah, and he's like, Hagrid, go faster!
Hagrid, speed up! And then Voldemort shows up.
He can fly by himself, doesn't need a broomstick.
Nope. Which is... So Harry's scar starts hurting. Mm-hmm. Voldemort shows up.
Right.
The lightning bolt-shaped scar.
On his forehead.
Starts hurting. Voldemort shows up, who can fly on his own. In the books, he's the only one that can do this.
Correct.
And I think that it makes it, like, much more powerful, the fact that, like, he's, like, that's just a crazy thing to be able to do, to fly on your own. In the movies, all the Death Eaters can do it, so you're like, whatever, but, like, Voldemort is a very, very powerful wizard.
Right.
So,
Harry's almost passed out.
Right.
Doesn't know where Voldemort is, just knows Voldemort's attacking him and the pain in his scar is exploding and...
Yep.
I think Hagrid is, like, slipping off the motorbike because he's been knocked unconscious, and Harry's trying to keep a grip on him, and it's just almost impossible.
Yep.
And
then Harry feels his wand, like, doing a spell.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry didn't think anything, didn't say anything. His wand just does a spell. I think gold sparks fly out.
I don't remember.
I believe it's gold.
But I'll believe you.
Something gold happens, and done. Voldemort is, like, whatever. Incapacitated. Yeah. Not incapacitated, but whatever. He's knocked back. And then Harry and Hagrid make it to, like, the safe zone that they were going to. And Harry, I think, just passes out.
Mm-hmm. I think they both crash land.
Yeah, they crash land and both are knocked unconscious. Or unless... I think Hagrid was unconscious already.
Yeah.
So Harry wakes up. He's in this little house.
He's at the Thompson's.
And he's immediately like, and like starts freaking out. And then I think Ted comes in.
Yeah.
Ted Thompson is, it's Ted first.
Mm-hmm.
So Ted walks in. He's like,
I know what
hey.
You're thinking of, and it's Ted first.
He's like, hey, I'm Ted Tonks. I'm Nymphadora's father. This is one of the safe zones. Your port key is going to leave very soon.
Get your shit together.
So get your shit together. And Harry's like, hey, but where's Hagrid? And it's kind of freaking out. And then?
I think so, yeah.
So then, and then he freaks out because he sees Bellatrix Lestrange coming. And he's like, and like pulls out his wand immediately. And then realizes as Bellatrix gets closer that her, like, hair is a bit grayer and she looks a bit older.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ted's like, that's my wife.
It's my wife you're pointing your wand at, son.
So, and Harry's like, oh, and lowers his wand.
Like, yeah, and then there's this moment of like, oh yeah, Andromeda Tonks doesn't look that much like Bellatrix, but
yeah.
Yeah.
But he's kind of freaking out. And then he asks to see Hagrid. Hagrid's okay.
Yeah.
Kind of suffered some damage, but he's alright.
Yeah, you know it's Hagrid.
Yeah. They have kind of a lovely little chat, but their port key's gonna leave.
Mm-hmm.
So then they go...
I think it's a hairbrush.
They grab the port key and get transferred to the Burrow.
Right.
And stuff happens.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so they get to the Burrow, and Molly Weasley is clearly very happy to see them. And so is Ginny. Ginny's there. Yay!
Yay!
Ginny!
And Harry's like, Fluttery Tommy!
Yeah, it's very cute. And, but then Ginny tells him, like, you're the first ones back, and you should have been the third ones back. Like, the other two port keys came back without you, and that's not really good.
Yeah, the other two port keys are, like, some other random objects, and no one came back with them, and Molly's, like, kind of freaking out.
Yeah. And so, over time...
Okay!
Sorry. We have a slight interruption.
I hope that...
Do you want to take that?
They can still hear... I'll text him.
Okay. So Lupin, I think Lupin returns first. Yes.
Lupin returns first and doesn't he slam Harry against the
wall?
Yeah.
Lupin
comes
Fred
in
or George.
And just like, I think Fred's first. No, George
Saint
first.
Like Fred, I'm holy. Okay. It's true. No, Fred's first. And Saint like Fred, I'm holy. So George says that. George is the one whose ear is attacked, so it's Fred.
Right, but
first.
I thought George came back first and then Fred runs into him. That's a movie thing. Yeah, so Lupin comes and throws Harry against the wall, and Harry's like, what the? And Lupin says, what was in the cage in my office when Harry Potter visited me?
Right.
And Harry's like, Grindylo, I'm pretty sure.
In a jar?
And Lupin's like, okay. And he was like, I had to make sure you weren't an imposter, because clearly they knew.
Yeah, someone leaked our departure time.
Yeah.
So, then I think, oh gosh. Then, I don't know. Oh, Hermione and Kingsley get back, and they're clearly pretty shaken, and like, Ron's not back yet, and Hermione's very distraught. I think they just kind of all stand outside watching the skies for a while, and Ginny puts her hand in Harry's, and there's just like, huh, moment.
Yeah, they're all, there's this, scary tension because, like, people should be getting back and they're not. And, yeah, life is hard.
Does Ron get back first or does George get back first?
I thought Ron did.
Okay, let's do Ron. So Ron and Tonks get back. And Tonks is, like, bragging about how amazing Ron was, and he was, like, shooting Death Eaters down from the back of a broom, and it was really quite impressive, and Hermione says something like, oh, huh, and Ron says, always the tone of surprise, which I think gets integrated into more of the movie, like, that becomes their sort of, like, thing, right. But it's only that one time in the book.
Yep.
Then, let's just say George gets back.
I can't remember if it was George or Fleur. So, George...
Oh, yeah, Bill and Fleur.
Bill and Fleur come back.
Great.
Whatever. Then George comes back with Arthur.
Right.
And George is bleeding. Like, a lot.
Profusely.
From his head.
Lots of bleeding.
Not good.
Nope.
So, Arthur's like, hey! Problems!
Help!
And so, brings George into the house... Molly starts cleaning him up.
Right. It's...
And sobbing.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Fair she's enough.
His mother. And so...
It's revealed that it was cursed off with Sectum Sempra by Snape.
By Snape. Yeah, Arthur says that Snape attacked them.
Yep.
Cut off George's ear.
Yeah.
And George is, like, in semi-consciousness.
Yeah. Tonks mentions that Bellatrix really tried to kill her.
Yeah.
So...
And then, one of my favorite parts of the entire book happens. So, George is laying down, and Harry's like, there's some internal monologue where Harry's like, it's kind of weird because, like, his face is kind of cleaned up, but, like, it's just clearly there's no ear there. Like, it's just this really awkward hole.
Like, it's healed, yeah, but...
Yeah. And Fred comes up and he says, like, how you doing, Georgie? And George, or how are you, or something.
Yeah.
And George says, saint-like. And Fred's like, saint-like? And he goes, yeah, because I'm holy. I'm holy, Fred. Get it? And Fred goes, of all the ear-related humor in the world, you go with I'm holy. And it's my favorite moment.
It's in the book and in the movie. It's in the book
and in the movie. It's just one of the best moments of the entire series. Because it just shows, like, Fred and George always... get the humor in things and always, like, kind of see that part.
Fun fact, so the twins...
Plus, I love puns.
That's true. The Weasley twins are played by two twins in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one guy playing two parts. And when later on in the book, when other things happen, and they're... Maybe I should just do this.
Yeah, probably. Do it later.
Okay, never mind. They're played by two twins.
They're played by actual, like, twin brothers.
Yes.
Oliver and...
Wood.
Something.
Thomas.
No. Anyway. One of them is Oliver Phelps. Don't remember the other one's name. Sorry.
Michael.
Sure. But not. So that humor happens.
So,
then... Someone
finally
up.
Gets back. Kingsley gets back.
Kingsley.
No, Kingsley was with Hermione.
See, I think maybe Bill comes back.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's Bill who comes back.
Bill comes back and he's like, hey... Oh, which I have a fun fact about this. But Bill comes back and he's like, yeah, so Mad-Eye's dead.
Yep.
And they're like, what's your fun fact, like, about Mad-Eye's what? Dead? And they're like, yeah, so Mundungus was on the bike was on the broomstick with Mad-Eye, and the second that the Death Eaters
appeared,
he disapparated, and so...
A killing curse that was meant for him went straight to Mad-Eye.
Yeah. My fun fact about this is that in the movie, the actor who plays Bill is the son of the actor who plays Mad-Eye Moody.
How crazy is that?
Right? And so he was like, it was kind of weird, because I was kind of telling people that my dad was dead, but not really, but like, because he's not really my dad, but he is my dad, but like, and he's not really dead, but he is. Anyway.
I think someone's confused about how acting works, but...
Well, right, but it was just like an interesting, like,
yeah,
kind of dealio. He's like, it was a weird thing to announce because my father's character was dead.
Right.
And, like, it's my father.
He does a very heartfelt, Mad-Eye's dead. So, people have been lost. Harry tries to leave. He starts picking up his bag and getting
ready
to go.
Yeah, Harry's like, all right, I'm gonna go find Horcruxes.
So, in the movie, this happens mostly just with, like, him sneaking off and Ron chases him down, which is a really great reestablishment of the Ron-Harry dynamic. In the movie, or in the book, Harry, like, expresses it to everyone, like, no, I have to go, I've put you all in danger, I can't do this, and, they're all just like, Harry, shut up.
It's true.
Everybody goes to bed. For the next 3 days, they are getting ready for the wedding of Bill and Fleur.
Yeah.
Mrs. Weasley is very, very upset about the fact that Ron and Hermione are intending not to return to Hogwarts and finish their 7th year, but are apparently going to go gallivanting around the country with Harry Potter. So she tries to keep them separate at all times and, like, keeps giving them all these, like, really mundane chores, but, like, busy work, and all three of them at different places.
Yeah, so, like, Hermione will be, like, Hermione, you and Ginny can, like, make the bed in the guest bedroom. Ron, if you want to take care of the gnomes in the garden, and Harry, if you can wash dishes with me. Yep. And she makes sure at some point to, like, interrogate one of them.
Yes.
At different points, because, if you remember, Harry, Dumbledore told Harry to go and find Horcruxes, and then he could tell Hermione and Ron what he was doing, right. But that's it.
And
that's
Hermione and Ron have decided they're going with him.
Ron and Hermione have decided that they're going with him, and they are honoring this. We three are the only ones that are going to know what's going on.
Right.
So, Molly Weasley is trying to get out of them why they're not going back to Hogwarts, mm-hmm. why they're going to, like, leave for a long time, why she won't be hearing from them, because she's a mother.
Right.
And wants to know these things. And they're all not cracking, because they're...
Gryffindors.
The three best friends that anyone could have.
Aww.
That took a sad tone, but it was because I added a burp.
Classy.
Right.
So, yeah.
So that continues for a while. They meet up every once in a while. Like, they find different, like there's one time that Molly tells them to, like, make the bed again. And so Hermione's like, we already did that, so let's meet up really quick. Or, yeah. Like, different times like that. But not very much.
And Harry also gets some stolen moments with Ginny.
Yep.
Which is very sweet. And at one point... and Ginny kind of explains to him what's going on. Like, he's like, God, there's a lot of stupid chores for this dumbass wedding. And she's like, my mom's trying to give you all these chores so that you can't all talk to each other and sneak off because she's mad. And he says, oh, what does she think? That someone else is going to kill off Voldemort while I'm here making vol-au-vents? Which I am assuming is some sort of French thing that you have at weddings. And right. Ginny looks at him and is like, is that what you're going to go do? And it's like, duh, Ginny, what else do you think he's going to go do?
But, yeah.
But Harry's like, and then he realizes, like, this is the first moment I've had with Ginny alone since Hogwarts, before we broke up. And there's, like, a moment. And then the moment passes. Because I think someone walks in. What?
Is this when they're...
That's Harry's birthday.
Okay. I didn't know if we were there yet.
We're getting there.
Okay.
Or, I mean, we're there now.
Okay.
It's the day before the wedding.
Gotcha. So, it's Harry's birthday. And it's the day before the wedding. Molly Weasley, they invite a bunch of people over, like, Tonks and
Remus
are there. Like,
that's, I think pretty much it. That's everybody.
I thought Kingsley was there. Maybe not.
Nope.
All the Weasleys.
Right. That's pretty much it. That's all you can spare that's still alive.
Right.
Like, Sirius can't come.
Sirius can't come.
Dumbledore can't come.
Molly makes Harry a badass snitch cake.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. That's so, like, cool. The coolest thing ever. They enjoy that. And then he opens up some presents. Oh!
Yes.
Including this watch.
Do the thing.
Okay.
Amazing.
So, Harry, Molly and Arthur Weasley give Harry a watch, and it's a gold watch that has, like, stars around it,
mm-hmm.
like stars in the dial kind of thing. And Molly says, this is the traditional gift that you give a young wizard when they come of age. So Harry has come of age.
Right.
17. She's like, this is the traditional gift you give. And she's like, I'm really sorry because we couldn't buy you, like, we didn't have enough money to afford you a new one, so this is a hand-me-down from her brother?
I believe so.
And she's like, so it's kind of scratched and, like, whatever. And he is just, like, overfilled with love and, like, emotion for them. And he just cuts her off and, like, gives her this huge hug. And she, and he's, like, just overwhelmed with
this so gift.
It's so beautiful. It's
so beautiful.
He gets some other stuff.
I think Hermione gives him a new sneakoscope. Oh, Ron gives him a book.
Oh, yes.
12 fail-safe. He has him open it like at a different. Like, oh, yeah. Not in front of the party.
Yeah, he's like, open this later, like when we're in our room
and so,
or something.
Yeah, and so Harry opens it and is like, a book. That's kind of a standard deviation from your usual gifts. And he's like, yeah, well. And so it's 12 fail-safe ways to charm witches. And Ron's like, yeah, friend George recommended this, and I really wish I'd had it last year because it really would have helped me chuck lavender and get things going with dot, dot, dot. Well, anyway, you'll find it really interesting, and it's not all wand work either, which I'm like, good job, Ron. Way to be classy. Gross. So, then, I think on the day of his birthday, or maybe the day after, I don't recall exactly.
I feel like it's the day after.
Yeah. But
because
so,
I think it's in the morning before the wedding.
Yeah, so Ginny invites Harry into her room. And, yeah.
I thought...
Nope.
Okay.
That's the movie.
Okay.
What are you thinking?
I thought it was in Ron's bedroom.
Nope, it's in her room. Because she invites him... I think she invites him in, and he notices how small it is, but bright. And that
okay.
He's never been in her room before, and there's,
I remember that description.
A poster of the harpies playing Quidditch.
I think there's a small window facing the Quidditch field.
Yep,
that
exactly.
They have.
And he says something like, nice view. And she's like, yeah, okay. Shut up. And she's like, I didn't know what to get you for your birthday because I know you're going to be traveling and I didn't really have something. I knew it needed to be small, something you could carry with you. And I wanted something for you to remember me by. And, you know, in case you meet any really attractive Vila while you're out there. Because it's sort of a play on the fact that Fleur is part Vila.
Yeah.
And Harry says, I think dating opportunities on the ground are going to be pretty slim, to be honest. And Ginny says, that's the silver lining I was looking for, and she kisses him. And that's her birthday gift to him.
Aww.
And it talks about, like, how there's fire and light, and, like, he's got one hand at the small of her back and one hand in her hair, and it's just all, like...
It's, like, the perfect...
Fireworks, explosions, yep. Blah, blah, blah. Everything you want your first... Well, not your first kiss, but everything you want a kiss to be.
You want a kiss to be.
And
then
fucking Ron comes in the damn door...
Did somebody say Ron Weasley? Yeah. Then he goes in, and then he's like, and Harry's like, well, moment's
over.
Yep. So great.
In the movie, it's kind of cute. Like, they sort of steal this kiss in the kitchen.
Well,
when
then,
she's, like, asking him to zip up her dress. And then
George walks in, and he goes, morning. And he has a spoon sticking out of his ear.
Right.
Which is, like, I know it's not book, but that part of the movie also makes me super happy. The fact that George has a spoon sticking out
That's
of his
true.
Ear.
That's funny.
It's awesome. Plus, I really enjoy when, in the morning, sending text messages of him saying, morning.
I've never gotten a text message from you that says morning.
I'll send them on you to tomorrow,
I'm
maybe.
So sad. So, that happens. So then it's the day of the wedding. And Harry's like, okay, well, the trace is off me now, so, they can find me, and I need to leave and go hunt Voldemort, and they're like, and Molly Weasley's like, no, you need to stay for the wedding. And he's like, this is the stupidest thing ever. So they disguise him. I think they steal a hair off a muggle down in the village, and they give him Polyjuice Potion.
For the wedding?
Mm-hmm. In the movie, he's just there as Harry Potter, and they're
Sorry. It is a redheaded boy in the village, a muggle, but they say that he's a cousin Barney.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep.
Right.
Because there's a ton of Weasleys.
Right.
Anyway.
And a couple of jokes are made about that.
Yeah, because some people are like, whose son are you? And Harry's like, wah, wah, wah. They're like, oh, yeah.
Yep, basically. And so, so the wedding happens and it's quite lovely and Ginny looks great.
There is, like, this really cool, like, the weddings are really cool. I don't remember all the exact elements, but, like, suddenly, the thing that they got married under, like, turns into doves.
Yeah, that's cool.
At some point.
Yeah,
like, the archway turns
yeah.
into doves. And then, like, which has to be awesome. Like, after the wedding portion is done, like, the whole thing just changes into, like, the dance
mm-hmm.
floor. Which has to be convenient to all get out. Because I've
mm-hmm.
been to a couple weddings in my lifetime, and, like, that is the most awkward time. When
yep.
dinner is taken down, but, like, you can't dance yet.
Mm-hmm.
Oof. So, Ginny's in a gold dress, and Harry's like, she looks super hot.
Victor Crumb is there?
Victor Crumb is there? apparently Fleur is like, let's invite the Tri-Wizard Champions.
Well, Harry's not supposed to be here, and Cedric is dead, so I guess we're inviting Victor. And Victor's kind of like eyeing Hermione.
Yeah.
And Harry, and talking to Harry, who's Barney. And I think Harry says something like, oh no, she's got a boyfriend.
Yeah, Harry's like, nope. And Crumb's like, meh.
There's a change and turns to Ginny.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it says something about Ginny, and then Harry's like, nope, she has a boyfriend too.
He's even bigger and tougher.
Yes. And then we see Xenophilius Lovegood.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Xenophilius Lovegood, as you might presume from his last name being Lovegood, is the father of one Luna Lovegood.
Mm-hmm.
He is wearing a suit that is like sunflower yellow.
Yep.
She's wearing a coordinating dress, I believe, or a matching dress.
Yep.
Sunflower yellow. And he's wearing this necklace with this weird symbol on it.
Mm-hmm.
That Harry's like, it looks like a weird eye. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what that is. And Crumb is like, not cool.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry's like, what are you talking about? And Harry Barney is like, what are you talking about? And Crumb is like, that is the sign of the evil wizard Grigorovich. And right. I can't believe that someone is here wearing that. Right. Like, Grigorovich, like, took down my people.
Right.
He's awful. He's right. the worst wizard ever.
Right.
Like, Dumbledore took him down, which was cool. Yeah. But, like, why would you wear that? It feels to me like, maybe this is just way too dramatic, but to me it felt almost like a Nazi thing. Like, seeing someone wear it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it'd be like going to a wedding and someone having a necklace with a swastika on it.
But
like,
nobody else at the wedding...
Not cool!
But nobody else at the wedding recognizes that they're wearing a swastika. And so you're like, everybody, do you see the swastika? And everybody's like, what?
It was like, what are you talking about? Spider. It originally meant peace. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah, everyone would be like, it's like a spider thingy. Why are you angry? And we're all like, because mass genocide! And everyone's like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
basically, that's essentially that what's happening. So, Harry and Xenophilius, Luna comes up and says, hi, Harry, and Harry says, how did you, how did you know it was me? And she says, oh, just your expression.
I love Luna.
Yeah.
Like, this is the part in the books where I actually start really liking Luna again, because for a while she's just too crazy
for my
taste.
She's really crazy. And so they have a little chat, and, yeah, I think she just...
He was supposed to say, hey, what's up? And then he goes to
Okay. Yeah, Alphaeus Dodge. That's where I was going to go with it, too.
Okay, cool. Go with it.
So, Alphaeus Dodge has recently written in the Daily Prophet a obituary for...
One Albus Percival Wulfric Brian Dumbledore.
And also is publishing, or no, so he's written an obituary for him, and the two of them were friends at school, and so he talked about Dumbledore, you know, and how he was always brilliant, and how he...
They were, like, best friends.
Yeah, and how he had this dad who, like, attacked Muggles, but that was never Dumbledore's way. Like, Dumbledore was really, like, pro-Muggle, or at least, like, Muggle equality, Muggle safety kind of thing.
But Dumbledore has a pretty screwed-up family.
Right, and then... how he and Dumbledore were going to go traipsing around the world after they turned 17, and then Dumbledore's
father... Which is like a tradition at the time?
Yeah, I think so. And then Dumbledore's father died, leaving him sort of the head of the family, because he was Dumbledore, was, what's his first name? Albus. There we go. Got there. Took a while. This is Albus, and then the brother Aberforth, and then sister Ariana, who hadn't gone to school. So, when the dad died, then Albus became head of the family. And then a year later, Ariana died, and so Albus gets this, like, really serious tone to him, and then, you know, Alphaeus is just like, hey, and then we know kind of the rest, how amazing he was, and how he, like, discovered all these things, and communicated with all these great wizards, and defeated Grigorovich, and blah, 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 blah.
Defeated Grindelwald.
Thank you. Grindelwald. Right. And that is the evil wizard, also. We said Grigorovich, but it's Grindelwald.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Mm.
Maybe I just heard Grigorovich because I wasn't paying attention. But,
okay,
yeah,
well,
Grindelwald is
the evil wizard. The evil Hitler wizard.
Right, evil Hitler wizard.
Preceding
Voldemort. So then, but the thing is, also in the same Daily Prophet, there was an article about Rita Skeeter. saying that she was publishing a biography of Albus Dumbledore to come out soon, and it was going to talk about his anti-Muggle sentiments and the very insidious relationship between him and Harry Potter. And basically, she insinuates in that article that Harry is the one who caused Dumbledore's death. Like, well, people saw him fleeing from the High Tower, and it was clear that both he and Dumbledore were not present at the tower, or at the school together for a while, and so, like, basically they cast a lot of question on whether Harry is involved in Dumbledore's death.
Not cool.
So, when Harry sees Elphias Dodge at the wedding, he's like, I'm gonna go find out about what, like, why is Rita Skeeter saying she's gonna publish all these nasty things about Dumbledore?
Right.
You know, like, apparently nasty things about his family and his relationships with them that no one else knows.
Yep.
So he goes over and is like, hi, Harry Potter. And he's like, oh, cool. Sit down.
So he sits down, and Ron's aunt something is there. God,
what is that aunt?
She's just terrible. I want to say Muriel.
Yes, it's Muriel.
Yes.
Nicely done.
So Ron's aunt Muriel is there. I believe Fred and George have made some kind of jokes about that. About her. Oh, I want to remember that. Fred and George have been talking about how, like, we kind of wish she would just die.
Yeah.
Because she's crazy and she's angry. She's batty and very angry. And she's one of those, like, angry, crotchety, sad women that have been, like, single when they're old.
Right.
And I'm not saying that all single women who are old are this way, but no. This one's crotchety.
Yeah.
So she's talking about how, like, she's so excited for the Rita Skeeter book, and how, like, it's going to tell the real story of Dumbledore, and how it's going to explain the relationship he had with Harry Potter, and all this stuff. Right. And Elphias Dodge is like, it's all lies. I knew Dumbledore.
Right.
I was his best friend. What I said in the editorial was correct.
Right.
Editorial.
She's like, oh, yeah, you think, you know, well, she's talked to, who did she talk to?
She talked to Bathilda Bagshot.
That's it. She got her hands on Bathilda Bagshot, and Bathilda had some very interesting things to say about the Dumbledore family.
Yes.
And their escapades in Godric's Hollow.
And Harry's like, hold up.
Yeah, Harry Bonnebry goes, Dumbledore's from Godric's Hollow? And she's like, you didn't know anything about him, did you, Barnaby?
Yeah. And Harry's like, I guess not. Which makes him feel really sad. And then Harry was born in Godric's Hollow.
Right.
His parents were there. He lived there for the year of his life that he was with his parents.
Right.
He lived in Godric's Hollow. And he's like, I can't believe Dumbledore never told me that we're from the same town. And then he was like, hold up. Like, I don't know anything about Dumbledore.
Yeah.
And he's like, damn it, when Dumbledore was alive, why didn't I ask him, like, what growing up was like, or, like, how he did some things?
And then
or
he remembers, like, oh, but I guess I did kind of try to ask him questions and he'd avoid them, like, when I asked him what he saw in the Mirror of Erised and he said a pair of thick woolen socks.
Right. And he's like, but damn it, we talked about me the whole time.
Yeah. It's always, Harry and Harry's future. And so, he's sort of musing on this, and then suddenly, a bobcat?
A lynx! A lynx shows up. And it's a silvery lynx, much like a Patronus, because it is a Patronus.
Oh-ho!
And it shows up in the middle of the wedding, and Kingsley's deep voice says, Get-er. The ministry has fallen.
Scrimgeour
is dead. They are coming. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh shit! And so people start freaking out. Panicking. I'm pretty sure... Oh. Never mind. Wait. We missed things.
What did we miss?
Because...
Oh, no! We missed the entire thing!
So, we're gonna rewind a bit here, because we missed major things.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's Harry's birthday again. Just pretend. And so, they're all gathered together. And someone shows up and tells, like, and says, hey, the Minister of Magic is on his way to celebrate Harry's birthday with him. And at this point, Remus and Tonks are like, hey, we're gonna get out of here. Because we don't really want to talk to him. And something else, I don't remember why.
Yeah.
But they're like, bow, and they leave. Then Scrimgeour shows up and is like, hey, I would like to talk to Harry and Hermione and Ron, please. And they're like, okay. And they go into the house. And then he's like, I'd like to speak to each of you alone. And Harry's like, no.
Yep.
Harry's like, we will be talked to together. Oh, sorry, Mags. I wasn't yelling at you. he was like, we will be talked to together. Yep. And Scrimgeour's like, I would prefer it alone. And Harry's like, F you, buddy. I really wish I could say that. But my mother's listening, so I won't. But anyway, so, Scrimgeour's like, fine. Sits him down on the couch in the living room. Says, hey. I think, like, says something like, you probably know I'm here. Yeah. And they're like, no, we don't. And he's like, well, you were named in the will of Albus Dumbledore.
Right.
And Hermione freaks out and is like, excuse me, sir. He died, like, a long time ago.
Yeah.
And, like,
you're just getting to the will
you're
now.
You're just getting it to us now. And she goes, like, I know that the ministry is able to, like, look at people's wills and, like, make sure that, so that dark objects aren't, like, yeah, dark magic on. Objects aren't passed on. She goes, obviously he's not passing us any dark magic. You suck, sir.
Yeah. And I think she says, like, the statute of limitations on that expires after 31 days.
Yeah. And he waited, like, as long as he possibly could.
Yeah.
And he's like, yep.
and he says, are you going for a career in magical law, Miss Granger? And she says, no, I'm just trying to do some good in the world.
Unlike the ministry.
Which is the insinuation. Also...
Mic drop.
It's a sad mic dropping.
That's a really good sound.
Thank you. Also, let's note that Hermione does go on for a career in magical law.
She does. But, you know.
But...
Yeah, so then he pulls out the will. First, Hermione?
Yeah.
He's like, hey, to Hermione Jean Granger, I leave my copy of... The Tales of Beedle the Bard.
In the hopes that she will find it illuminating.
Illuminating and instructive.
Yes, I think that's correct.
And then she hands it over, and she's like, alright.
And he's, well, he says in the book, did you and Dumbledore ever discuss ancient runes, and, or their translations, because it's in ancient runes.
Yeah.
And she says, no, and I'm assuming that if the ministry wasn't able to find any secret codes hidden in 31 days, that I certainly won't find it in any longer.
And he's like, meh.
Meh.
And then to Ronald Bilious Weasley, I leave the Deluminator, which I think this is just movie.
Light his way in the darkness.
But
or
in the movie he says, something of my own invention, that in times that seem most dark, or to remember that in times that where we are in the most darkness, one can always find the light.
Yeah, I think it's something along the lines of, like, darkness and light. Right. But he doesn't say that he made it himself. And Ron's just like, oh.
Ron's like, all
right. I think Ron's actually surprised. He says, Dumbledore left me something. And the cute thing is that Scrimgeour's like, were you not close to him? Like, he's clearly suspecting something. And
right.
Hermione's like, no, of course you were, Ron. Of course you were close to him. And Harry's looking at her like,
he wasn't.
I'm the special one.
I'm the special one. Hermione's like, but we all need to be special if we're all given things in the will.
Yeah, exactly.
So
she's like,
just... Pretend we were all really special.
Yeah, exactly. And so...
Also, I want a Mac on him later, so he should think he's special.
Yeah, I mean, he's been complimenting me and, like, being nice and gave me a handkerchief when I was crying and...
So that was nice.
Yeah.
So,
Ron... We kind of skipped some of the nice things that Ron picked up from 12 fail-safe ways to Charmed Witches.
He's, like, complimenting her and stuff all the time.
He compliments her. And she's not sure what to do with it.
She's like, okay.
One of the things that I really like... I'm going to talk about this now.
Okay.
Because I'm going to forget it by the time we get to the other part. So, later, if you've seen the movie, you know that Ron and Hermione end up together.
Plus, if you've listened to any of these podcasts.
Right. Ron and Hermione end up together. The movie makes it a little more like Myrrh, but the book is very clear. I don't care what J.K. Rowling said post-publication of the book. Hermione and Ron are meant to be together. So... the cute thing is that Ron is clearly trying at the beginning of book 7 to, like, be nice for Hermione, and, like, he reads up this book on, like, how to charm witches and blah, 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 blah. But what really gets her in the end is Ron being very much himself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually what gets her, so in the movie, it's, like, when they almost die in the basilisk chamber.
Yeah.
And then they survive and then they kiss, which is cute. But what actually happens is in the movie, when Hogwarts is falling and they're trying to clear out the castle and protect everyone, Ron yells, "What about the house elves?" And she's like, "What do you want me to? Do you want us to go get them and have them fight?" And he says, "Well, no, but somebody needs to warn them so they can get out and be safe." And that's when she grabs him and kisses him.
Yeah.
And it's just this beautiful, like, he's being totally himself, but he's respecting something that really matters to her deeply. Like, it's not about compliments about how she decorated for the wedding. It's not about, like, here, let me give you a tissue when you're crying. It is a real sincere connection, and it's beautiful, and I really like it. That is my little rant for the evening.
That was a good rant.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm not completely sold on
Ron. I don't care. I don't care if you're not sold on Ron and Hermione. Ron and Hermione, Harry and Ginny, end of story. Except for, I don't necessarily know how I feel about books that encourage young people to believe that you meet your soulmate at 11 or 10.
Yeah, see, that's one of my... Okay, yeah. Okay, Carrie's soapbox time. That is my issue with Ron and Ginny. I get it.
This is me nailing the soapbox together. Also, you mean Ron and Hermione?
Nope, I mean Harry and Ginny.
Okay, you said Ron and Ginny.
Damn it.
dollar in the jar.
So, my problem with Harry and Ginny is that I really want Harry to go out into the world and find someone new. I get it. I get that Ginny is kick-ass at Quidditch. I get that she likes the same things as Harry.
Right.
I get it that there's this connection, but part of me was like, but it's a high school connection. And we've had
but
those.
But is it a high school connection because they fight the Dark
Probably
Lord?
Not.
I think that's the thing.
They're kind
I
of
think
into
that's
it.
The thing we're supposed to understand is, like...
Personally, okay.
I mean, I sort of think of it in the sort of, like, way that people used to get married when they were really young. Like, when we were, you know... I want to say colonizing, but that's the wrong word. When we were settling the Wild West and, like, when people were going off to war, like, when we had to make big adult decisions at very young ages, and you
that's
didn't
true,
have sort of, like,
young.
Extended adolescence as we have now.
And, like, I get that, but I just feel, I don't know, I always want him to find someone, like, not in the books.
Yes, I totally agree with you. I think it's a problematic set. I think it makes sense within the context of the book, but it's a problematic setup where everybody meets the person that they're going to be with by the time they're 11.
Right. Not cool.
Not good.
Not realistic.
Draco does not.
Nor does Neville.
Not in the books, correct.
Right.
He meets Luna. But that's in the movie.
But that's in the movie, not in the books.
I actually felt it was more like pro-Dean Luna.
Slash, in the short story that came out about them being older.
But anyway,
Anyway, okay, so Ron's given the Deluminator.
Right.
Then,
is that where we were still at?
Yeah.
I'm really glad you're here.
You're here too. So then it comes to Harry's turn, and Harry's like,
ooh, what's for me? What's
like,
for
I
me?
Bet he's gonna leave me instructions
my favorite.
Or like a super awesome weapon, or
oh,
like
he's gonna give me Godric's
ass.
Sword. He's gonna give me Gryffindor's sword.
Okay.
Well, no, because I think were they talking?
Does he think that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he does.
Okay.
Because.
What?
Even prior to this conversation,
oh,
when
gosh.
When he, this is completely skipped in the movie, when he and Ron and Hermione were able to sneak off together, they were like,
right.
What are we going to do about the Horcruxes? Do you have any ideas? And Harry's like, no. And Ron's like, oh. And Hermione's like, well, I have some ideas. And they're like, how do you have ideas?
And she's like,
Harry freaking Granger.
I should just sit out for
Harry
a little bit.
Harry really is Granger.
Hermione James Weasley.
Weasley.
And Ron Gene Potter.
Hermione's like, yeah, I've been reading up on Horcruxes. And Harry's like, how are you reading up on Horcruxes right now?
And
she's like, I got some books on them. He's like, where did you get books on Horcruxes? There were no books in the library. She's like, well, Dumbledore removed them from the library, but he didn't destroy them. And he's like, what? She's like, they were in his office.
So I just said Accio books, and they came. And so it's not really stealing.
Right.
Because they came to me freely.
Right. Dumbledore would have wanted us to have them. And Harry's like, I think I'm angry with you. Mostly because I didn't think of this. But so then she talks a little bit about, like, basically, it tells you how to make a Horcrux. The only thing that it didn't answer was what would happen if you split your soul more than once. Which is why, she says, I am pretty sure,
it's
you know,
never been done
that
before.
This is how Tom Riddle got his information. And so,
So
she says one of the difficult things is how to destroy a Horcrux because it's entire, like, you have to destroy whatever the Horcrux is contained in order to destroy the piece of soul.
So, so she talks about how the soul is very dependent on its container.
Right.
So, when you have a soul, which everyone has a soul, so right. I don't know why I began that sentence with when, but since you have a soul and its container, your body, dies, then the soul dies within right. it as well. Right?
I believe she says...
Dependent on the container.
Ron, if I took up a sword and ran you through right now, your soul would be unhurt. And he's right. That's a comfort.
He's like, oh, great. So, the thing is that Horcruxes are stored in, random objects.
Right.
So, how do you kill an object?
Right.
Because that's the only way to get the soul to die.
And they're magical objects, so they're somewhat self-repairing.
Right.
And so protected. So, how do you kill... So, you basically have to destroy them with cursive things.
Right. So, for instance, with the diary.
Right.
How do you kill a diary? Well, one way to do it is to stab it with a basilisk fang, because they're incredibly poisonous.
One way to attempt to do it is to flush it down a toilet, but as we know, didn't work.
But that doesn't work out too well. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so Harry stabbed it with a basilisk fang, and basilisk venom only has one cure, phoenix tears, which is very rare, so therefore the diary couldn't repair itself.
Right.
So they're like, we don't have basilisk venom to just carry around with us, and Hermione's like, yeah, but the Sword of Gryffindor...
Is goblin made,
and she just stops there, and they're like,
oh, okay,
and goblins and she goes, are bad,
and she's like, well, goblins are kick-ass at making weapons,
right,
and so any, rust won't hurt the blade, it won't get dull from, whatever, and she goes, and it only takes that. It only takes in that which will make it stronger.
Right.
So, if you recall from book 2, when Harry was in the Chamber of Secrets...
Book the Deuce, the worst of the books.
Podcast. Harry stabbed the basilisk with the Sword of Gryffindor.
Right.
Which, since is goblin made, will only take in the things which makes it stronger.
Yeah.
And pretty sure having basilisk venom in it is gonna make it a stronger weapon.
Yep.
So it is now impregnated.
Yes.
With
I'm the so venom. Glad you remember the bat is born cheeses. Impregnated with basilisk venom.
Yep. Which, okay. Short stint here. This is in the movie, but it's much later when they're hanging out in the tent.
Right.
And it is one of my favorite scenes because Hermione's cutting Harry's hair and she goes, oh my gosh. And then just walks away and he's like, did you hurt me?
Right.
And she's like, no. Oh, she's like, I figured it out. And it's just a really great scene. Yeah. I like that it happens here, but in the movie they do a good job.
That's true.
Okay.
It's very true. So, Harry is expected, having had this discussion previously, now on his birthday, with the discussion with Rufus Scrimgeour, Harry is Rufus. Expecting whatever. Harry is Ralph.
This podcast became a hot mess in a hot minute. It's all I'm saying.
More apology spoken for everybody.
Woo!
Harry is expecting
to get the Sword of Gryffindor.
Ralph Scrimgeour to hand over the Sword of Gryffindor.
The Slytherin Claw of Gryffindor.
That sounds pretty intense, really.
That could kill a Horcrux, I'm fairly sure.
The Slytherin Claw of Gryffindor.
Whoa, okay. So,
I'm gonna make a noise for the Slytherin Claw of Gryffindor. To use from now on whenever a Horcrux has to be killed, and that noise is going to be...
Awesome.
So Harry's expecting the Sword of Gryffindor to be brought out of a bag, maybe, but Ronald Scrimgeour is not carrying a big enough bag.
But Ronald Simpson is not does not have a big enough bag for it. So Harry's like, I wonder what I'm going to get. And, yeah, so then Ryan Skinner is like, hey, Harry, you were left the golden snitch from the first time that you played Quidditch at Hogwarts.
And Rodolfo Smith holds out the golden snitch.
And Harry's like, all right, and takes it. And then there's this moment where Rodney snuggle puff.
Nice. Good.
Like, just stares at Harry and is like...
Yep.
And just takes a moment to just look at him, and Harry's like, what the hell? And then he's like, all right. And then says, oh, and the Sword of Gryffindor, and Harry's like, papa! And then he's like, but... Yeah. About that, though. Not really Dumbledore's to give.
Right.
It's an artifact of the school.
Oh, and Hermione gets up.
And Hermione's like, excuse me, sir. It is Harry's. It showed up in the Chamber of Secrets.
It presented itself to Harry.
And, I can't think of another name. I don't really
remember what else.
Yeah, and so she's just freaking out. And then the minister's like, yeah, but it presents itself to any Gryffindor in need, not just Harry, so.
Right.
And he's like, and anyway, the sword is missing.
Right.
And they're like, what? And he's like, yeah, we don't know where it is. And they're like, wow, the ministry is super efficient and awesome.
Glad you spent 31 days, or more than 31 days, trying to tear apart the things that Dumbledore left us instead of looking for the freaking Sword of Gryffindor or, you know, taking down Voldemort.
You guys are really awesome at your jobs.
Good job.
You should keep them forever.
By forever, we mean never.
Yeah. So.
Never.
And then he hightails it out of there.
Yep.
And then Hermione's like, turns to Harry and is like, And Harry's like, what's up? And she goes, well, snitches have flesh memories.
Right.
And he's like, yep. And so what a flesh memory is.
Oh, whoa, whoa.
Footnote. Each snitch is, manufactured and never touched by any of the people who, are making the snitch. And every snitch, for every Quidditch game, there's a new snitch.
Yep.
And it remembers who touched it.
Yep.
It has a flesh memory.
Whoa.
So, Hermione was like, I figured when you grabbed it, that it would do something that, like, Dumbledore would
touch you something. People wear gloves while they play Quidditch.
Apparently the Seeker doesn't.
Alright.
Although in the movies they have, like, those gloves that are, like they have the fingers, though.
Oh.
Fingers exposed. Yeah. It's okay, like an outer thing.
It's like a biker glove.
It's like a half glove.
Mm-hmm.
So Hermione's like, I just figured that Dumbledore would have left you something. I don't know why he left you the snitch. And Harry's like, oh, my friend. If you remember correctly, which you don't because you don't care about Quidditch, the first time I caught a snitch, it wasn't with my hand, it was with my mouth. And he said, because that's the one he almost swallowed.
Mm-hmm.
So Harry pops in his mouth really quick and is like all excited because he's like, Dumbledore's going to give me awesome things. And then pops back out and the snitch just says, in Dumbledore's curvy handwriting, mm-hmm. I open at the close. And Harry's like, what the hell does that mean?
Yep. Hermione and Ron have
but
no idea.
But okay. And Ron and Hermione are like, we don't know.
Got nothing.
And so Harry's like, well, that's another thing to solve.
Great. Thanks, Dumbledore.
And then, another gift that he gets during his birthday is that, Hagrid gives him a pouch, and I don't remember who made it.
Oh, yeah.
But, only the person that owns the pouch can open it and get inside of it. And so Harry puts in this, like, he puts the pouch around his neck and then puts in his most, like, treasured possessions, which are the snitch.
Mm-hmm.
He also puts in a shard of glass
that
was from the mirror, which I don't know if we talked about, but
that's okay. Harry,
fifth book.
Yeah, we never talked about the mirror.
I don't think we talked about this. In the fifth book, Sirius gave Harry a mirror that he could look into, and then Sirius had the pairing mirror, and they could talk to each other,
mm-hmm.
which is fun. Harry's got smashed somehow.
It got mostly cracked.
Okay.
He's only got, like, a 2-inch
piece left,
and that's what he cut his hand on at the beginning of the story.
Right, and he thought he saw, like, a pale blue eye in it, kind of like Dumbledore's, and he was like, what? So he decided to keep it.
Yeah.
He kept that, the snitch. I feel like there's something else
and the locket.
In his pouch. And the locket.
From R.A.B.
The locket from R.A.B., the pretend Horcrux. Keeps that in the pouch around him at
not
all
because
times.
Of its not because of its worth, but because of its value or because of what it costs.
Because of
to
what it costs to get it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, sadness. So yeah, I feel like we recovered his birthday well.
Correct. So now we're back
fast
to the
forward
wedding.
To back where we were. Lynx has come. Says the Ministry has fallen.
Right.
Scrimgeour is dead. They are coming.
Right.
And so Harry and Hermione and Ron meet up, and Hermione goes like, and apparates them.
Right, because Hermione's a good apparator.
Right. Apparates them into the Muggle world?
Correct, into London.
Into London. And,
So I Harry think, and Ron...
And Harry... Oh, sorry, continue.
Harry and Ron are in dress robes.
Yep.
And so people are looking at them funny, whereas Hermione's just in a dress and looks great. Which I, like, I kind of like this, that in the Wizarding world and the Muggle world, the women wear close enough clothing that nobody looks at them funny, but the men look funny.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I appreciate that.
Me too.
I appreciate the reversal of patriarchy there. Thanks, JK.
Woot!
Oh,
ironic.
I know, right?
Because, like, they... publishers asked her to go by JK so that,
right.
like, young boys would think it was a male writer right. so they'd want to read it. And she's reversing patriarchy up
yeah.
in here, y'all!
Oh!
Okay.
I wonder if you look back through the books if there's a lot of that.
Probably.
There's definitely a lot of egalitarianism that's sort of sneakily in there. Like, there's clearly been female headmistresses.
Yep.
And heads of house are equally, I think, male and female, or
yep.
possibly, because it's McGonagall, Sprout.
It's McGonagall, Sprout, Snape, and Flitwick.
Okay, so that's equal.
It's equal.
Ghosts are relatively equal in gender. I think most of the names of their authors and professors are relatively equal in gender.
And I understand that, like, Harry and Ron and Hermione, obviously there's two men to one
right.
female, but there is a strong presence of, like, more minor characters. Like, we have both male and females.
Right,
like, we have
exactly.
the Nevilles and the Lunas. We
yep.
have the Blaze Zabinis and the Pansy Parkinsons.
Right. Yeah, can you imagine if, like, Draco Malfoy had been a girl? Because then people would have been, like, all...
Yeah.
Yeah. That you couldn't... Like, there's certain things where, like, you have to have the genders be the same, because otherwise people start reading in weird stuff.
Yeah. And if Harry is that obsessed with taking down a girl...
Yeah, that get then you get
there's
the weird gender
gonna
power-y
get
things.
Weird.
Ooh,
that's gonna get
yeah.
weird. Yuck. Ew, I don't want to think about it. Okay, move on. So they apparate into the Muggle
right.
world. Harry and Ron duck in like a alleyway and change.
Yep.
And Harry's like, I don't have my rucksack. I don't have anything. Like,
yeah.
I was not planning on this. And
yep.
and Hermione's like, I'm awesome and I got it under control.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
And they're like, what? And she has a small purple beaded bag. Which previously we have heard in the books, where like she'll drop it every once in a while, like it sounds really heavy. And
yeah,
like what
thunk.
The hell? Yeah, and they're like, what is going on? Turns out Hermione put a
undetectable extension charm.
Thank you, undetectable extension charm on it. Thank you. Oh, and so she like in this tiny beaded bag of hers, this purple beaded bag,
mm-hmm.
she has like a bunch of books, she has all of their clothes, I think
mm-hmm.
she has some food in there,
mm-hmm.
like a bunch
Mary
of junk.
Mary Poppins. Oh, I think all of Harry's gold, maybe?
I think a bunch of gold.
Yeah, a bunch of gold.
Some poly, like a bunch of polyjuice potion
yeah.
that she got from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like basically anything you need.
Yeah.
And they're like, awesome. And so.
A tent.
She brought the tent from the, that they used in the Quidditch World Cup. So she's got it under control. She's Hermione Granger. So they change, they, and then they go into a coffee shop to, like, figure things out.
Right.
Like, they're like, because they were just at a wedding, and now they're, like, on the hunt for Horcruxes.
Yeah.
Like, they need some time to kind of transition.
Well, and, like, Harry, I think, wants to go back to the wedding and make
Harry,
sure people are okay.
Yeah. Harry's like, we have to go back and fight. And Hermione's like, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, they're here because of you.
Yeah. And so he's like, well, what do we do now? Voldemort could be anywhere. What do we, like, how do we...
Yeah.
What do we do?
And Hermione's like, I don't know. Like, I don't know where to start.
Yeah. Harry, do you have any ideas where you want to start? I mean, I guess we're starting now. Let's go.
Yeah. And he's like, well, I don't know, like, what Voldemort is up to. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And then two... workers, like, they look like construction workers, I think,
yeah, mm-hmm.
walk into the coffee shop. And
they get coffee. Or no, they sit down.
They stand at the... Oh, they sit down?
They sit down and the waitress comes over and they, like, wave her away.
Yeah. And then I think the waitress comes over to, like, Harry and Hermione and Ron. Is this where Hermione orders a cappuccino?
Yep.
And then Ron's like, the same?
Yep, that sounds good.
That sounds good. And Harry's like, sure, yeah. Three cappuccinos. The waitress is like, this is the weirdest night of my life. So then they're talking more, and then I think Harry sees movement.
When the waitress brings them their cappuccinos, Ron, like, hates it.
He's yeah, like, Ron's like, this is
disgusting.
Gross.
And Harry and Hermione, knowing how to drink coffee, are just like, whatever, Ron, shut up.
You stupid wizard. And then I think Harry sees movement.
I think that's right.
And turns out the two construction workers that came in are actually Death Eaters.
Yay!
Woo! And so, huge fight breaks out.
Stupefy! Blah! Blah!
Yes!
That's a crashing dish.
Nice! So yeah, at the end of it, they, shockingly, the three protagonists, Harry, Ron, and Hermione, come out okay.
I'm just going to bring sound effects for the rest of this.
And the two Death Eaters are like,
slump.
I think they're not unconscious, but I think they're frozen. Like, one of them's got hit with Petrificus Totalis, the other one might be unconscious.
I think that's correct.
So, Ron gets, like, freaky weird. Like, Ron's like, we should, like, whatever. Oh, yeah,
we should kill him.
We should kill him. And, like, which, as a reader, I was like, whoa! Yeah. Ronald Weasley! Yeah. Like, we should kill them. Like, whoa! Brosif. So Harry or Hermione's like, we're not going to kill people. And Ron's like, yeah, but what if one of them was the one that killed Mad-Eye Moody or, like, did whatever?
Right.
And Hermione's like, maybe we should just, like, wipe their memories.
Yeah.
And I think Harry's like, plus, if we kill them, like, Voldemort and other Death Eaters are probably gonna notice that they're dead.
Right.
And then they're gonna know that we were here and stuff, and, like, that's probably not good to leave a trail.
Yeah.
They do a memory charm.
Yep.
On
them and on the waitress as well.
On them and on the waitress. And then
they clean up the cafe so it doesn't look like a...
Right.
And then...
Go to Grimmauld Place?
Yep. Then they decide, like, well...
So they're like, we're going to go to Grimmauld Place because Harry owns it.
I think the idea is just kind of like, let's go see what happens. And they're like, remember how Snape can get in? And Harry's like, yeah, bring it on.
I will kill Snape.
I will kill him.
And Ron's like, let's do this! And Ron's like, okay!
Yay, Dad!
Let's read a book about this!
She totally brought Hogwarts of History with her, by the way.
Totally did, which just makes me so happy.
Yeah, I think she's something like it would be wrong to leave it behind.
Do you think Hogwarts of History is to Hermione as the Harry Potter series is to us?
Whoa.
I know.
Whoa.
Right? Right.
Dude. Mind's blown.
Right. Yeah.
So they go to Grimmauld Place.
They go to Grimmauld Place, and they're like, we don't know if there's going to be Death Eaters there, but let's see.
Let's go find out.
Because if you remember book 5, Dumbledore was the secret keeper of where Grimmauld Place was, so, like, no one could see it unless they knew the address. So Hermione's like, I don't really know how this works. He's dead. So since Dumbledore died, he was the secret keeper.
Right.
His death meant that everyone who knew about it was now a secret keeper. And she's like, including Snape. So we can pretty much guess that everyone knows.
Yeah.
About Grimmauld Place.
Right.
And Harry's like, whatever, bring it on. So then they apparate to Grimmauld Place.
Yep.
They walk in, and do you want to take over what happens?
Yeah. I mean, just the first thing that happens is they come in, and they're... tongues curl back on themselves and freeze.
Yep.
But one of them, I think, manages to stutter out, we're not Snape.
Well.
Oh, I don't know.
Is it Snape? Or is that what they say first, or is there the question first?
No. Oh, yeah, there's Severus Snape, and it's Mad-Eye Moody's voice, and then,
one of them's like, we're not Snape.
Yeah, and even though they're, yeah, even though their tongue.
Snape.
Yeah. It's a good tongue curl noise.
Who's Snape?
And so then their tongues uncurl. So this is like one of the jinxes that Mad-Eye Moody set up in order to prevent Snape from coming in or from speaking about the place. As they walk further in, a ghostly figure rises from the carpet, sort of made out of dust, and it's Albus Dumbledore, like, looking very zombie-like and kind of coming for them.
Yeah.
I think Hermione says, it wasn't us, we didn't kill you.
We didn't kill you! And then it's like, and it's all good.
Yeah. And then Mrs. Black
starts screaming. The portrait
starts screaming. That's just standard fare for a grim old place.
And then Hermione, I think, shuts the curtains on Mrs. Black.
Yeah.
And then I think she says... Maybe that's just movie, but she says something like...
She does it
she,
here.
Mm-hmm. She does a spell that will show any stuff going on.
Hominem Revealo.
Yeah, so any other spell, then nothing happens. And then in the movie, there's this dramatic moment where they're like, we're alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this very much like... I think in the movie, in the book too, or in the book as well, I should say, there's this moment here where it's very clear that like... We're not going to Hogwarts, and we are very much, it's just us three in this thing, and we're separated from our family, and it's really starting now. Like, before, it was just all this planning and, like, hypothetical situations, and now it's, we're here, we're doing this.
Yeah.
But
they're really scared. They all end up sleeping on sleeping bags in the living room.
Yeah, because they don't want to, like, go into the rest of the house.
Yeah, because they want to be, I think Hermione's like, I don't want to be alone. And I think Ron and Harry are like, oh! Well, we'll protect you. We'll make a sacrifice for that. Yeah, we'll take one for the team. It's cool.
It's fine.
And Harry, we don't get this in the movie, but Harry has a flash of Voldemort's vision.
Mm-hmm.
And Voldemort is torturing one of the guys who failed to retrieve Harry Potter.
Yep.
And he's not torturing him. He's forcing Malfoy to torture him. He's forcing Draco to use Cruciatus on the guy.
Which is just... Really sick. Is this where Harry feels this vision coming on and then he goes to the bathroom?
Yep.
Which, again, J.K. Rowling, utilizing bathrooms.
Exactly.
Thank you, good lady.
Like people actually do.
Yeah. So Harry feels this vision going on and he knows that Hermione doesn't want him to have these visions
anymore. Well, to be fair, I mean, a whole bunch of people got hurt because he had them in five.
Right. He really should not be having this connection, but whatever. So then he goes into the bathroom and, like, has this intense vision. Mm-hmm. And then, like, kind of comes out of it and he's, like, passed onto the floor. I think, like, Ron's like, hey, buddy, you okay in there?
I think Hermione brings him his toothbrush.
Oh, yeah. Which, of course, Hermione packed a toothbrush. Adorable.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, no, I'm fine. And she's like, you look clammy and sad. And he's like, I'm good. Which, after seeing a vision of Draco being forced to torture someone, I mean, that's screwed up. Can we just talk about this for a little bit?
Yeah.
I don't know what we're going to say about it, but, like, Voldemort forcing a 17-year-old kid to torture another human being, just, like, child
it's
soldier.
It's sick.
Creepiness and not coolness. Like, I don't know how...
After six books of, like, Malfoy and the Malfoys being set up as just awful, awful people, we finally get a lot of sympathy for them in book seven.
Yes.
We get, and I mean, this mimics sort of what happens when you grow up is that people become less black and white, right? Like, you get to see Voldemort is black and white. To some extent.
Right.
To probably the most you're going to get in this book. Actually, Umbridge.
I was going to say, actually, Umbridge is the most black and white to me, but...
But as you go along, like, Voldemort becomes less black and white, Draco becomes less black and white,
Dumbledore becomes less black and white,
like,
does Harry?
Harry definitely uses unforgivable curses in book seven in order to get what needs to be done.
Right, so I guess, yeah.
So, okay.
So he has this vision.
Yep.
And then they all decide to go to bed.
Yep.
I feel like we should almost wrap it up now.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean,
so.
I know we usually go for like 2 hours, but I feel like this is a good ending place.
I think so. I think...
Because then we can do all the Grimmauld Place stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's a lot more Grimmauld Place stuff than we know in the, in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. I think... You know, let's trail off a little bit, because, Ron, probably taking another page out of 12 Failsafe Ways to Charm Witches, lets Hermione sleep on the couch.
Yep.
And when Harry wakes up in the early wee hours of the morning, He notices that they'd fallen asleep holding hands,
mm-hmm.
and he feels even more alone than he thought he ever could.
Yeah, he feels super alone.
And so that's when he decides to get his wand and go search the house.
Oh, are we going to do this part?
No, I was just going to stop it there.
Oh, okay.
We could go all the way, though, and do the letter and the broomstick. The letter and the toy broomstick thing.
Did you want to do that? Well, it's one of my favorite parts, but, like, okay. We can save it for next
time. Okay, let's save it for next time. Let's watch with that. So, yeah. Harry is now... So, gentle viewers, Harry is now exploring the house.
Harry feels super alone, so he decides to get up and explore the house while Hermione and Ron sleep. Because it was clear that they were holding hands at one point. Yeah. Or still are.
Yeah, they're still... It was clear they had fallen asleep holding hands, I think is what the book says. So
that's where we're going to leave you. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else we want to say?
I just want to say this is my favorite book of all the books in the series.
This is your favorite book.
This is my favorite book.
This is my...
Second favorite? Third favorite?
Third, I think. Yeah, because, okay, it's a toss-up. So number three is my favorite.
Right.
But it's a toss-up between, like, 1 and 7 for spots 2 and 3. Like,
okay, fair enough.
Because 1 just has that magical of, like, it's the first mm-hmm. one. Like, it was my, you know?
Yeah, that's very true.
But the 7th one is pretty damn good.
It is really, really good. I mean, honestly, dear readers, if you have only seen the movies and you've not yet read the books, this is a great time to get the books. A lot of libraries just have them and the wait list is short.
Yeah.
So this is a great time to get caught
so
up.
It's so worth it.
It's so worth it.
Like, I don't know. I think that a lot of times there is a perception there of, like, that they're just kids' books and whatever, but they are really good. Mm-mm. And the movies do not do the books. I think the movies are done very well. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But the books are just so much better.
I only know one movie that's ever done a book justice. And that is The Fault in Our Stars.
Mm. I did not read the book, but I saw the movie.
That was one of the best book adaptations I've ever seen. It was almost perfectly in line with the book. The few places where it deviated did so to the betterment of the plot and the clarification of the characters. And I was actually able to make some connections between characters and situations that I had not yet been able to make when I was reading the book. Like the parents... Like, I didn't notice this in reading the book because the scenes with the parents are so few and far between.
Mm.
But the mothers, the parents of both Hazel and Gus react in very similar ways to their kids' sicknesses. Even though, like, Gus's parents are like, encouragements! Like,
right.
There's no rainbow without the rain! And Hazel's mom is like, let's celebrate Bastille Day! It's this sort of, like, finding joy in the everyday.
Right.
I didn't quite get that in the book, and I got it much more clearly in the movie. I don't know necessarily because they, like, tried to highlight that, but just because the interactions were there. But I just, ugh.
Oh!
But that is the only time that I've ever watched a movie and been like, yeah.
I saw,
Also, First Mockingjay was pretty decent.
Mm. I was gonna say, I actually enjoy the Hunger Games adaptation. I know you don't share this opinion, but I enjoy seeing the Hunger Games from a more third person objective point of view than just Katniss's first person point of view. Like, but I think I enjoy that because I read the book, and so the movie is like adding those kind of extra things to that like existing knowledge. Like it's like when you watch like an audio commentary, or like I don't know, like special features or something. That's how it felt to me, because I had read the book from the first-person point of view. So it was like, So it was like redoing the story, but from a different point of view. I'm just repeating myself. The one that I was going to bring up, though, that did a really good job with going from book to movie was The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Did not see it.
Mm.
So.
Because, I felt like it was really faithful to the book. I spent some time between, so I didn't read the book and then go immediately to the movie. But yeah, it was done very faithfully, and I was also able to pick up much more about the main character in the movie.
Okay.
Because the book is written in all diary entries, and so in the movie it was nice to see... get out of the main character's head so you could see him clearly.
Yeah, that's very true. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Because I've heard that about Percy. I haven't read that nor seen the movie.
Mm.
Also, the 6.5 hour BBC version of Pride and Prejudice.
Oh! That thing is excellent.
Oh, so good.
We watched it fully in my English literature course in high school, and it was amazing.
My mom and I used to watch, like, the last third, because we had it on VHS, so we'd pop in the third VHS, and we would just watch that. And it just, I loved it. Oh, it was so great. It's really tragic because when they transferred it to DVD, some of the coloration is off. So, like, different scenes, the coloration is really weird. Anybody who says that the Keira Knightley version is better needs to not be my friend.
I absolutely love any scene in that 6 hour version with Mary playing the piano.
Right?
Oh god, Anytime she plays the piano or sings. Right. So, in high school, my best friend was...
Green boughs will cover me!
So, I added the English literature course later. I don't remember why. I, like, dropped... Oh, I was slated to take, like, Foods 1 or something, and I was like, I don't really want to take Foods 1 anymore.
Yeah.
I would, like, switch to English literature, please, and they were like, all right. So I went in there.
I'm not gonna argue with that.
And so we were watching this movie, and, like, Mary is playing the piano, and it's just the funniest thing ever to me.
It's so hilarious.
And my best friend, Sandra, was in the course as well, and we're both, like, giggling under our breaths. Because no one else is, like, reacting to it. Like, everyone's taking it seriously.
That's sad.
And then, I think it was when she was singing. Like, it finally got to the part where she's singing. And my friend Sandra, like, just couldn't handle it more. And she was like, like, just, like, the loudest laugh ever. And then the whole class was like, oh, this is actually funny.
Yes,
and then,
exactly.
Like, we got much more into it. But I was like, thank you, Sanj, because we needed that.
Yep.
I was going to bring up something else. Although we're probably just wasting time at this point.
That's true. We're just killing time.
All right. I was going to bring up The Book Thief, but I don't really remember.
I have not seen the Book Thief movie.
Mm.
The Movie Thief?
The Movie Thief? Have you read The Book Thief?
I have read The Book Thief.
Oh, so good.
Yeah,
I remember really liking the movie. I think they did a good job, but it wasn't, like, outstanding.
Oh, okay. I feel like that's what I heard, too.
Yeah.
All right. So, gentle viewers... Until next week, gentle readers, listeners, got there, found the verb, found the gerund.
Tune in next time to hear about Grimmauld Place.
Lots of stuff about Grimmauld Place, and then we're going camping.
And then we're gonna go camping!
Camping!
Wizard-seeking Horcrux style.
Yeah.
That sounded like an ad.
It did, it's location. Like a Craigslist ad. Wizard seeks Horcrux.
Single must be part of Voldemort.
Single white wizard seeks Horcrux. Preferably one half of soul. Or less.
Or less. Preferably from one Thomas Marvolo Riddle.
Right.
Junior.
Mm-hmm.
No. He'd be the first Thomas Marvolo Riddle.
Preferred accessibility that one does not have to die before acquiring.
Also, single white wizard... seeking weapon to destroy said Horcrux.
It's more like this is a polyamorous relationship. Single white wizard seeks
that's gonna get
polyamorous
awkward.
Relationship.
He's gonna have to, like, go in two separate newspapers.
It's true.
In order to get this accomplished. He's gonna have to be in the Daily Prophet and the Quibbler.
Oh man. Not a lot of overlapping readership between those two.
I'm guessing not. So anyway, join us next week for all that fun, or... whenever we record the next one.
Right.
Probably next week.
Probably.
I don't know. At some point.
Yep.
When we record the next installment of Carrie and Emmy Remember Harry Potter.
To the best of our abilities.
To the best of our abilities. As clearly seen when we need to go back in time.
We're getting better.
Yeah. Remember in book one when we forgot about Norbert?
Oh man. That was the worst.
Anyway.
All right.
So have a good morning, afternoon, evening, night. And see you next time, or talk to you next time.
Bye.